The scripture today is Genesis 41:37-44 and Luke 12:16-21 and 35-48, Pew Bible page number 36 and 905-906. Joseph's suggestions were all received by Pharaoh and his officials. So Pharaoh asked his officials, "Can we find anyone else like this man, so obviously filled with the Spirit of God?" And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has revealed this meaning of the dreams to you, clearly no one else is as intelligent or wise as you are. You will be in charge of my court, and all of my people will take orders from you. Only I, sitting on my throne, will have a rank higher than yours." Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I hereby put you in charge of the entire land of Egypt." And Pharaoh moved his signet ring from his hand and placed it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in fine linen cloth clothing and hung a gold chain around his neck. Then he had Joseph ride in a chariot reserved for his second in command. And wherever Joseph went, the command was shouted, "Kneel down." So Pharaoh put Joseph in charge of all of Egypt. And Pharaoh said to him, "I am Pharaoh, but no one will lift a hand or foot in the entire land of Egypt without your approval." Then he told him a story. A rich man had a fertile farm that produced fine crops. He said to himself, "What should I do? I don't have room for all my crops." Then he said, "I know. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. Then I'll have room enough to store all my wheat and other goods. And then I'll sit back and say to myself, 'My friend, you have enough stored away for years to come. Now take it easy. Eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, you will die this very night, and then who will get everything you work for?' Yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth, but not have a rich relationship with God. Be dressed for service and keep lamps burning as though you were waiting for your master return for the wedding feast. Then you will be ready to open the door and let him in the moment he arrives and knocks. The servants who are ready will be waiting for his return, but his return will be rewarded. I tell you the truth, he himself will seat them, put on an apron, and serve them as they sit and eat. He may come in the middle of the night or just before dawn, but whenever he comes, he will reward the servants who are ready. Understand this, if a homeowner knew exactly when a burglar was coming, he would not permit his house to be broken into. You also must be ready all the time, for the Son of Man will come when least expected." Peter asked, "Lord, is that illustration just for us or for everyone?" And the Lord replied, "A faithful, sensible servant is one to whom the master can give responsibility of managing his other household servants and feeding them. If the master returns and finds that the servant has done a good job, there will be a reward. I tell you the truth, the master will put that servant in charge of all he owns. But what if the servant thinks, 'My master won't be back for a while,' and he begins beating the other servants, partying and getting drunk? The master will return unannounced and then unexpected, and he will cut the servant in pieces and banish him with the unfaithful. And a servant who knows what the master wants but isn't prepared and doesn't carry out those instructions will be severely punished. But someone who does not know and then does something wrong will be punished only lightly. When someone has given much, much will be required in return. And when someone has been instructed with much, even more will be required."
You have about 15 and a half days now. Just a little over 2 weeks. You know, we're about to turn into April. Do you know what I'm talking about? That deadline. April 15th. That one that we don't want to talk about. Many of us do things throughout the year to try to do cartwheels or various other things to try to get away from that deadline. Have you ever watched news programs the evening of the 15th? It's kind of interesting. Sometimes they'll send a reporter to hang out at a post office to see all the strange characters that wait to the very last minute to try to get that last postmark so that they meet the deadline. And we think about all the poor individuals who show up 10 minutes too late. And yet, that's a deadline that we know about. April 15th, we talk about it every year, and yet for some reason, some people still find themselves surprised by that deadline. And isn't this something that shows up time and time again in our lives? We get wrapped up in our routines. We want to do those things that we enjoy, those things that we want to do. And then all the troubles and worries that fall on us that demand immediate attention. And then those deadlines that we were expecting suddenly sneak up on us. We think about students studying for tests. I know as a college professor, I could hand out a syllabus at the beginning of the semester with all the due dates for the papers and the tests for the semester, and inevitably every semester there'll be someone who says, "Oh, is the paper due tomorrow? Or it was due today?" We have these kinds of situations show up time and time again. And there are those deadlines that we can push off and delay. Perhaps you're in need of surgery. That knee is starting to hurt. And you're thinking, okay, well, maybe I need surgery, but I'll push it off another 6 months. And then 6 months later you say, okay, well, I'll push it off another 6 months. But inevitably it's going to catch up with you. And the doctor, when he performs that surgery, will then say, well, you should have done that 5 years ago. And we think about all sorts of deadlines in our lives. And then there are obviously those deadlines that we cannot put off. These are rare moments. Or once-in-a-lifetime moments. If you want to give someone a gift on her 16th birthday, it only happens once. Or his 18th birthday, it only happens once. And this is why wives are so insistent that their husbands are attentive to those anniversary dates. It only happens once. Jesus' parables this morning are about deadlines. And these are the biggest of deadlines. Where our lives come to an end. Jesus, of course, tells us stories to pull us in and metaphors to give us a glimpse of what is coming for us. The first of these is a parable many of us probably have heard before, many of us may know well. It is of a rich man who suddenly finds himself reaping the benefits of some good investments. And now he's able to enjoy those investments. And he's figuring out, well, what can I do to make this an even more prosperous year or an even more prosperous venture? Let me think about ways to grow this even larger. And all these grandiose plans. And then Jesus says he goes to sleep that night with those visions. And God interrupts him and says, "You fool." Sorry. A little drama there. "You fool! Now is the time." And we all know that time is coming. But do we want to be in that position? No. That's a nightmare for us to think about having that happen to us. And this rich man who has found himself wrapped up in the concerns of this life, we would say, well, that's a wondrous position to be in. Prosperity. To be able to enjoy the fruits of your labors. Why is there a problem? The problem is, that is where his entire focus lies. He's so concerned with this life, he's forgotten the bigger picture, where he is going. So that's the first story Jesus tells. The second story Jesus tells is of a master who is going to a celebration, leaving his household and all the goods that are in it to the care of his servants. And the question is, how are the servants going to behave in this situation? For me, I love the story of Joseph. And Joseph is in that rare, beautiful situation where he is a trustworthy servant. It's an amazing story to see Joseph in Potiphar's household and Potiphar trusting Joseph with the keys to the house and all the things that Potiphar had in his wealth. But we know Joseph then is betrayed by Potiphar's wife and he ends up in prison. And have you read the details in that story that Joseph is in prison and the jailer gives Joseph the keys to the jail? Can you imagine that kind of situation? And then the verses you heard this morning when Pharaoh gives Joseph essentially the keys to Egypt. It says, now you will be second in command. And so that's a beautiful image that if a master can walk away and leave the keys to someone who is entirely trustworthy. That's what Jesus is hoping for us. But how many of us know our natures? How many of us know temptation? The situation where an intersection where a police officer has previously been sitting, watching things, the officer drives away, then what happens in that intersection? Classroom, teacher, teaching, then has to step outside of the classroom to address something with the administration. What happens inside the classroom? Parents leaving the house, two teenagers in the house. What happens? All sorts of things that we think about. When the cat is away, the mice will play. Those kinds of images are human nature. And Jesus in this parable says that this is what happens among the servants. They start enjoying the food and the drink in the household to the point of drunkenness. And they become lazy and abandon their responsibilities. And Jesus leaves those who are listening with him with a question, saying, well, what is it going to be like for those servants when the master shows up? And then the image of judgment, that when the master does show up, he will flog them. He will tear them apart, cast them out, and then they will be among the unbelievers. No longer will he count them among his servants. Nightmare situation once again. The deadline shows up, and they are not prepared. They are not trustworthy servants. So today, as we read these parables, as we meditate on Jesus' words, obviously we think about the end of our lives. Obviously we think about the end of human history and the day of judgment, and we think about Christ's return and Christ judging the nations, as we see in Matthew 25, separating the sheep from the goat. And so we think about these things and we start speculating. It's human nature. We start speculating, okay, well, when is Christ going to come back? One of my good friends did a study of the book of Revelation and loves being on top of current conjectures about when Christ is going to come back. And he's looked at the history of different dates that people have proposed and how those have come and gone and people have been disappointed. And now he said there's a movement to say, well, it's May 14th of this year, by May 14th of this year. And that's not what these parables are about, trying to get you to pin down a specific date and say, well, I can skate along until May 13th and then May 14th I'll get prepared. That's not what this is about. This is about a certain type of living. It is fostering that life that we saw in the story of Joseph, that he is the trustworthy servant who can handle the keys of Potiphar's household, the jail, or of all of Egypt. And this is a situation not where Jesus wants to come back and find you doing something bad and then be the stern judge. This is Jesus wants to find us faithful. That Jesus came to explain these things to us so that we will be prepared. We think about this. What is the life of readiness? Okay, have you ever heard someone ask you, well, are you ready today? If Christ were to come back right at this moment, would you embrace it? Would you say, come, Lord Jesus, come now? Or would you say, well, can you delay it for a little bit? I need to do this and this. I want to travel to Europe. I want to make sure that I earn $50,000 this year or whatever that "but I would" statement would be. Or are you living a life where you say, well, all of this is temporary. I gladly step away from it because I know my Lord is coming back and he will show me what is most important. Jesus here says the deadline is coming. And most likely it will surprise us. And you think about your life and the way God has spoken to you. God so often surprises us. But I don't think we should live in terror of that day. I think we should have a healthy fear of it, but I don't think we should have a terror of that day. I think we should certainly live in preparation for it. There's a beautiful story, a short story written by J.R.R. Tolkien. You may know him for Lord of the Rings. This is a short story called Leif by Niggle. And that's a strange name, but the central character is a painter. Okay? And the painter has this great vision of this beautiful painting that he wants to paint of a tree and its leaves. But throughout his life, he's constantly being interrupted by his neighbors. And if that metaphor doesn't speak to you, you could draw a number of other metaphors here. Say, a mechanic working on making that classic car working again. Or a doctor working on the cure for cancer. Or a lawyer working on a case that will make his or her name for all time in the legal field. Any of those kinds of metaphors, and those people, whatever career you've pursued, the dreams you've pursued, put that at the center of this story. And then think about all the people who kept interrupting you with all the little pesky details in their lives. And so Niggle constantly meets these interruptions. He's grumbling as he does them, but he does something sacrificial for his neighbor. His immediate neighbor. But in the middle of one of these interruptions, and he's nowhere near finished on his painting, there comes a point when a driver shows up. And the way Tolkien introduces the story is, there was once a little man called Niggle who had a long journey to make. He did not want to go. Indeed, the whole idea was distasteful to him. When we think about our own understanding of death. But he could not get out of it. He knew he would have to start sometime, but he did not hurry with his preparations. And so that's the beginning of this. And so in the middle of this altercation, the driver shows up. "Come along," he said, "I'm the driver." Niggle stumbled down from a ladder. His fever seemed to have come on again, and his head was swimming. He felt cold all over. "Driver," he chattered. "Driver of what?" "You and your carriage," said the man. "The carriage was ordered long ago. It has come at last. It's waiting. You start today on your journey, you know." "Oh, dear," said poor Niggle, beginning to weep. "And it's not even finished," referring to his painting. "Not finished," said the driver. "Well, it's finished with, as far as you're concerned, at any rate. Come along." Niggle went quite quietly. The driver gave him no time to pack, saying that he ought to have done that before. And then there's a point where he comes into an empty space and he hears voices discussing his life. One of the voices is a severe voice, and then the other voice is a merciful voice. And the severe voice says, "Well, look at his life. He didn't really accomplish much, and he didn't really do many good things." But the merciful voice says, "He took care of all those people who interrupted him." And then the severe voice says, "Well, he constantly complained about it." And the merciful voice says, "Well, there was that point where he really sacrificed for his neighbor." And the severe voice said, "Okay, well, maybe." And then the severe voice says, "I think you put your defense of him too strongly, but you have the last word. It is your task, of course, to put the best interpretation on the facts. Sometimes they will bear it. What do you propose?" "I think it is a case for a little gentle treatment now," said the second voice. Niggle thought that he had never heard anything so generous as that voice. It made gentle treatment sound like a load of rich gifts and the summons to a king's feast. Then suddenly Niggle felt ashamed. I won't give away the entire story if you want to read it, but I strongly encourage you. It is, once again, an image of what's coming for us, a day of judgment, when Christ becomes our advocate on that day. And as Jesus has said in his own parables here, what a joy it will be for the master to find his servants ready. And those glorious images of the master serving his servants. And those points where, just as the disciples were there when Jesus walked around and washed their feet, Jesus will serve us. The day is coming. The deadline will arrive. We cannot put it off. Will we be ready? We come now to a time in our service for meditation, for consideration, for prayer, as you look over your own life, as you sing the words of hymn number 605, "Living for Jesus." I want you to consider, have you ever committed your life to Christ? If you have not, this is a time for you to walk forward, and this church will pray for you and encourage you and show how we have followed Christ. If you already made that commitment, know that this is a time for you to consider, are you living for your deadline? If it were to come today, would you be ready? As we stand together and sing hymn number 605.